This is Jason Q. Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the Jason Q. Citizen and Friends program for this Friday, the 23rd of September. I hope that many people will be listening to this in the future and will timestamp it because it's a really, really important time to do that. It's very interesting just listening to Patrick there in the news talking about those that can have things both ways. In this hour, I'm going to be speaking to Alexandra Marshall from The Spectator, prolific writer, incredibly talented and prolific person, and I can't wait to sink my teeth into all of the great topics that she's been working on, starting with the royal unfolding of the funeral of the Queen over the last week and how that is already moving into new and perhaps predictable or unpredictable new areas. But I also want to talk to her about what's also happening in the background and the linking up with artificial intelligence, the work that she's doing in that area, and also as the online editor for The Spectator, just who and what are bringing new ideas forward that are now becoming published in this fantastic online newspaper. But I want to make this point about the digital age, and that is this. The purpose is that there will be no more secrets. There can be no more privacy. And yet the same people pushing this are going after former US President Trump for keeping secret documents in his private home that Trump himself had the power to declassify and therefore remove said secrecy, making them totally transparent. So like Patrick said in the news, you can't have it both ways, and yet here are the American authorities ushering in the globalist plans of the World Economic Forum and are rejecting the idea of transparency. So are they saying that there is one rule for thee and one rule for me? We will continue to keep our secrets, but we want to know all of yours. And ironically, the removal of information or the information hierarchy is a characteristic of the age of Aquarius, or free access to public information, not private. It seems that all of this is all upside down. Now, in other news, and very interesting this week, was Jordan Peterson's interview on the Piers Morgan show and his comments regarding Vladimir Putin. It was actually on a video done by Dr. Steve Turley, who said that what's happening is that we are seeing that the world is moving towards a renewable energy economy without the safety net in place of affordable and necessary energy sources. We are in a commodities-based global economy, crushing a currency-based system, which we now see as a fraud. He who controls the food and fuel truly controls the world. And so the ruling aristocracy believed it controlled the world's finances and therefore could run their entire renewables transition. Only now, says Turley, we are learning that the Davos group got that entirely wrong. And it was Peterson who had the last laugh with Piers Morgan, leaving him speechless. Now, in financial news, we're seeing that precious metals are staying stable in this period of high inflation, but we're seeing reserve banks all around the world hiking rates at an ever-increasing rate. The US Fed has increased their interest rates in the United States by 0.75% this week, and policymakers from Sweden, the Riksbank, have surprised markets by going up a full 1 percentage point. Ironically, markets are fragile, with US equities down 4%, and bond yields soar as two-year yields climb to the highest in 15 years. So what does it mean? It means that we are in certainly uncharted times. How uncharted? I'm going to throw this article at you from, would you believe, the Australian Financial Review, who has said that the RBA, the Australian Reserve Bank, will not pay dividends to the government before the end of the decade, revealing its bond buying program that propped up the economy through pandemic could ultimately cost up to $58 billion as it nurses a $44 billion paper loss on its fixed income holdings. The central bank which began its $300 billion bond buying program in November of 2020, released its internal findings. And it's saying now that, wait for this, its assets are now lower than its liabilities. That's right, they are $12.4 billion upside down. And it was Deputy Governor Michelle Bullock that said, if any commercial entity had negative equity, assets would be insufficient to meet liabilities and therefore the company would not be a going concern, said Ms. Bullock, before adding that the different rules apply to central banks that can create money and that the ability for it to do its job was unaffected. Does that remind you of too big to fail? Truly, truly astonishing that this is where we are today, that we live in a world where we are expected to give up our privacy, we are expected to meet the obligations financially, and those that make the rules no longer have to meet their financial obligations, and they don't have to meet the same rules of transparency at all, and they can keep their secrets. Does it make you feel like you're being played? Certainly makes me feel that way. Did you know that there are many ways that you can listen to TNT Radio? Why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device, or download our app from the App Store? We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
Headlines as they come in.
They have the breaking news.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Alexandra Marshall is the online editor for The Spectator Australia, contributor to various publications, a political commentator on GB News and Sky News Australia. She's the young ambassador for Australians for Constitutional Monarchy and the English Speaking Union, a political advisor and a former AI database designer. She's a very busy lady. Welcome to Jason Q Citizen and Friends.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Look, it's terrific to have you on the program. You've obviously been enormously busy this week, as much as any other week. Can you just give us a little bit of a recap of what a week in the life of the changing of the monarch would be to a prolific writer such as yourself?
Well, when a world-changing event happens like this, and there have been several in the past few years, you have to disrupt your schedules and obviously give an event like this the airtime that it deserves. It is a matter of public interest, especially when a head of state passes away. But the Queen in particular, not only was she our head of state, but she is arguably one of the most influential people in the world and has ruled for 70 years. And she was a guiding figure for the world's political leaders. So obviously her passing has thrown the political conversation into chaos. And there will be fallout from this as we go in the months leading up from this event. So yes, in the life and times, I guess, of a journalist, when an event like this happens, you have to be flexible and give it the coverage it deserves.
It certainly does. I mean, it is its own story. It's the recap. It's the marking of history for many people, those that have grown up our entire lives and obviously, you know, well into adulthood and becoming parents, perhaps grandparents, etc., to children who may be only, you know, not adults yet in their first 10 years or 15 or 20 years of life. It's a very different concept for people but having said that, these people would have only ever known the Queen their entire life. And so it is a jump for anyone of any age. So it, as you said, it is a time to mark history the way that it has been, and it's been done with enormous distinction. The profession has certainly provided an immense catalogue of a 70-year career. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Well, certainly, as a journalist, it's not the story that we thought was going to be written. I mean, people have been planning for the eventual passing of the Queen for many years. She had frail health and she was 96. But I don't think anybody in the profession expected the public sentiment to be what it was. And that changed the story that we were reporting on. And it's turned into this narrative about how we see ourselves as a civilization, how the West is feeling at the moment, and it has reinvigorated a connection to our cultural and spiritual heritage that we perhaps had let slide. And so as a journalist, that story in particular has been the most interesting fallout from the tragic passing of Her Majesty, and that has really taken particularly the left-wing media by surprise. I don't think they expected to be covering that sort of story. And so it's interesting to watch that develop and to listen to particularly young people unable to express why they were so moved by the event and to try and analyse what it is that we are feeling as a young generation and why we are so connected to these customs and symbols that, and given no airtime in our schooling area or education.
Yes, it's it is a profound moment, as we've said. We're watching and viewing different people, different emotions. There has obviously been some predicted backlash that we're seeing within the broader, well, let's say, the left-wing community there, but it's kind of been reined in a lot by the leaders of the Labor Party, who are playing a very, very straight bat here. And what I found really interesting this week was just to have a look and see when Peter Fitzsimons' Australian Republic movement would sort of get it a little bit of a momentum going, like, when do they take their first step out? Because this is something that's been cooking in the background. It was even former Liberal Prime Minister John Howard that said it won't be until the Queen's passing that I predict that the Republic will get a kickstart, and that would be a time we would move forward. But the funny thing was, I jumped on and something turned up in my social media feed, and I jumped on and had a look at the page. And unbelievably, the Australian Republic movement is selling their merchandise, all of it, at 50% off. And I thought, that is a very strange way to relaunch your campaign. And perhaps it is that they've jumped a little bit too soon, if that's the way where they're headed. But it seems that once again, the Australian community is divided. It's clearly going through its own grieving process. And one wonders how long the country should now actually grieve before it decides to take action. It's a really serious thing. If you go to a counsellor, for example, Alexandra, when you lose a loved one, often they'll say, don't do anything for 12 months. Don't think about buying a new home or starting a new job. Just go along with the way you're doing. Just get over the grieving process here. And this is a collective grieving of the country. So I'm just interested from perhaps a journalistic perspective, where you might think you might be going next, or is the race already on because we're already seeing that Prince William is out there and active?
Well, I don't know if you saw it, but there was a fabulous cartoon by Johannes Leek, which had all the Republican faithfuls carrying the coffin of the Republic through the streets, because the reaction to the public, instead of pushing people towards wanting a republic, it seems to have pushed them in the other direction. They've seen an awful lot of nastiness and racism and poor behaviour and selfish politicking from the people who are behind the Republican movement. And on the other side, they have seen this enormous outpouring of community and culture and national pride and love for each other and history and all the things that used to matter to us as a country, and that has become condensed in the idea of this constitutional monarchy. And so that has put a massive spanner in the arms of the Republican movement. The reason that we were seeing Albanese play it so straight is his polling is obviously telling him that it's not popular to start trumpeting the Republican. He's not going to get anywhere in his polling if he does that. So he has come out against the fringe movement of activism and instead behaved himself. Now, that is a sure sign that his idea of pushing Republic really strongly during his elected period is coming to an end. Now, it was always his plan to leave the Republic question until his second term. It may be a case that that may not be on the cards anymore if the public can maintain this love of culture and heritage.
Yeah, look, that's such an interesting point there, because one thing that's been baffling me is that why would he have appointed Matt Thistlethwaite as the Assistant Minister for the Republic and then declare within moments of the Queen's death that he was putting that on hold for 3 years? And you've just made that very interesting point there, that he was never going to do anything in his first term anyway, because it made no sense. What was he thinking, that the Queen was going to go from 96 to 99 years of age in his first term and he'd have to deal with it then? But I think you've made the point clear now that he never had really any intention of moving on the Republic in his first term.
Oh, I can explain why he appointed the Assistant Minister for the Republic, and that was to placate his left-wing supporters who were pushing for a Republic. He could say, well, I've appointed a minister, therefore I've done something that you've asked me in the election. That was mainly basically just virtue signalling that he'd done it.
Wow. So the intention is there, and this would explain, therefore, why the the Labor Party, the current government, are playing such a straight bat towards the monarchy. But what happens now, of course, is where anything is possible, right? We've got the new, inexperienced, and probably the longest ever time on the bench, King Charles III, taking centre stage. For some reason, he looks nervous. He looks a little bit unhealthy. There's obviously some concern there. And now we've got William coming out, and he's straight up there talking about the Green New Deal, which is something that King Charles, as monarch, can no longer play. He can't say the things that he was saying when he was the Prince of Wales, right?
Yeah, so they're in a difficult position as the royal family. Like, the royal family, because they can't be involved in politics, they have to find some kind of cause to champion for the people. It gives them a distraction and something to do. Now, they have conflated environmentalism and caring for the environment with the political movement of climate change, and that is backed by big business and mining enterprises, and also a social Marxist-leaning political endeavour. Now, they have to be super careful, because if they lean into this political movement of climate, they will isolate the conservative voters who are their natural allies. And they're not going to get any love from Marxists going forward, so it's a lose-lose situation for them. If instead of opening these stupid things like Earthshot Awards and talking about activism and stealing campaign notes from basically the World Economic Forum, as Prince William did last week, if they instead did some genuine environmental work and, you know, took a camera and took Netflix out to the Amazon or something, that kind of thing they can get away with comfortably, and it wouldn't do them any damage. So they have to very quickly understand that there are two things going on here, and they cannot indulge a Marxist climate movement. It will be the end of them.
Gosh, so brilliantly put. We're going to pause for a quick break. When we return, we're going to continue the discussion with the online editor of The Spectator, Alexandra Marshall. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Patrick Henningsen.
So the question they're posing to this doctor, it feels like the viruses are all over the news, whether it's monkeypox, Ebola, polio, or coronavirus. And Dr. Varma answers here, several factors help explain why we're hearing so much about viral outbreaks. The key operative word there is hearing so much. We're hearing so much. The reason we're hearing so much about viruses is because the media can't stop pumping it out. Are there more viruses out in nature? Is there an explosion of different viruses? No. You'd have to be really debilitated on an intellectual level to sort of posit anything like that.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
The story behind the biggest election takeover in history.
We're only now being able to finally confirm exactly how this worked.
Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are donating more money to local governments ahead of the election. $100 million on top of a $300 million gift.
The most money any individual has ever spent to win a presidential campaign in the history of our country.
The election was bought way before Election Day.
They stole it fair and square. They changed the voting rules in the middle of the game.
A nation divided, rigged.
It was a rigged election. People have to find out what happened
at SalemNow.com.
The PCR test for monkeypox. Another crap PCR test for another crap virus.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. Alexandra, my question would therefore be, based on the behaviour now of Prince William being involved in the Green Movement and moving along in this potential era, I guess, was this accidental or was in fact it engineered? Now that we've got the royal family aligning with the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, world governments, and pretty much everyone on the global stage to be pro-climate change, did they have a choice, meaning it was accidental, or are they sort of part of this whole thing and the monarchy is having to move itself into a political direction here, seemingly because it is a single-based solution now? The collective idea is climate change or bust.
I genuinely believe that on behalf of the royal family, we're seeing political naivety. I mean, it's very easy if you take bad advice from lots of influential people for many decades that what you are doing is morally correct and it's not inherently political. I am sure that Charles and William and other royals think that this is not a political movement. This is about saving the planet and doing the right thing. I'm sure they've been sold on that narrative, and they may perhaps be missing the undercurrent of eco-fascism and Marxism and some extremely dangerous activism from fringe groups like Extinction Rebellion, who want to destroy the entire system, including the monarchy, who are acting underneath these movements. Now, I don't think a royal family would endorse a Marxist movement that wants to see them, you know, ended if they really knew what was going on. So unfortunately for William and Charles, they've been in this bubble for so long, they may not be able to see what we see, but what you and I notice, and that is the great harm that this political climate movement is doing. And if he's got any common sense, he will listen to the conservatives who are advising them to take a step back from this. Keep the environmentalism by all means. No one is going to punish them for wanting to care for the environment, but separate themselves out as quickly as possible from all of these big tech, big market-driven organisations. You can't be giving out awards to activist movements. It's not a good look for the monarchy. And we had really hoped that they would separate themselves from this, but it's so far, we're only a couple of days in, and they're back at it again.
Wow. It is mind-blowing, because this was an unexpected, according to tradition. So here we are having a break in tradition now in something that people have responded to because they actually love the Queen so much. It was all about the traditions that you've just spoken about earlier. I want to cross to another article that appeared in a Spectator. Jordan Peterson defends the Commonwealth. I mean, it's a magnificent headline, because you just, you're compelled to read it. You would just never expect that this would be something that he would say. And yet, it's from something quite simple. He said he was talking about Donald Trump and speaking of his experience at the Kentucky Derby, where 160,000 people were packed in to see former President Trump speak. Peterson likened the crowd's energy to what the atmosphere must have been to see the Kennedys at the height of their power. We were up in the restaurant. The place was just buzzing. Trump came in, and it was, you could just feel the energy, the electric energy. And I thought, this is not good. This is too much, man. This is too much fame for anybody to bear. It is the condensing of this fame into a political figure that concerned Jordan Peterson the most. Of the monarchical front, you have four divisions of power. You have executive, legislative, judicial, and symbolic, and the monarch holds the symbolic weight. That's really smart, because it separates fame to some degree from the political weight. You see, what happens in the US is, first of all, the president tends to turn into the czar. So the point here is that, yes, the president of the United States is both head of state and head of government, technically the king and the prime minister, and yet Peterson is saying it's just too much power, and the separation of powers is so important. But what we're talking about now, that there is a political blurring and the climate change narrative being almost too high and too hard to resist, that it feels like that the royals have been suckered in to play an extra role and are following on to try and build popularity instead of falling into the traditional role that they're meant to do. So they're forcing it, and it feels like that this is the setup to backfire. What I love about this story is someone that you don't expect to be talking the narrative, such as Peterson, is actually making a very clear case. And if William and Charles are watching, they go, Peterson's right here. We need to pull back here.
Well, Jordan Peterson is first and foremost against tyrannies. And what he has recognised is the unusual system of government that constitutional monarchies possess is the best protection against tyrannical politicians coming into existence. Now, he made a point about being too much power in one person when he was talking about Donald Trump, but he wrote this before the Queen's funeral. Now, you would definitely argue that the amount of power that she had, at least emotional power, is far in excess of what anybody had predicted that she held over that country, or even the Commonwealth realms in general. I mean, she had world leaders bowing to her, and she wasn't even alive anymore. Mm. But what she did with that power is she couldn't wield political power with it. And so that power is not destructive, and it is not dangerous. Peterson was talking about how when you put political power with the power of sort of emotional worship together, this is when you get political personality cults, where you can convince the public to do lots of things beyond democracy, which is the power that he was concerned about. Now, what he also pointed out is that human beings are hierarchical. So even if you want to live in a socialist utopia, the human beings want to form themselves into these pyramids of power. And so one way or another, someone's going to end up as top dog. And you have to make sure that the top dog doesn't have too much power in themselves. Now, with a constitutional monarchy, the politicians are sort of kept safe by this monarchy that can dismiss them and put power back into the hands of the people. Now, that is what he was talking about being important. And he also made a final point that without a monarchy, this hereditary power base, US presidents have family born to rule power bases of their own. That's the first thing they did. And you don't find that in Australia. You don't find that in Canada. You don't find that in the UK. So you get hereditary power systems in republics if you don't have a monarchy. It's an interesting thing that human beings will do, and they have real power.
Gosh, that is profound. I mean, obviously we're used to seeing, you know, the so-called Clinton dynasty of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton having her shot. Clearly we had George Bush Sr. and George W. Bush. We've got Barack Obama, and of course there's always the potential that Michelle Obama may turn political. And we are exactly seeing that, the dynasties that are created in a Republican system that many people wouldn't have been aware of. And yet in Australia...
People want to have dynasties. It's a human, we've been living in these systems for so many thousands of years that we gravitate toward them no matter what we claim to like and to want. And so at least when it's confined in a constitutional monarchy, that system exists, it fulfills that need within us, but they don't have the power that political hereditary systems have, which have more in common with an old school monarchy than the constitutional monarchy does.
One of the things that we've learned throughout this COVID period is the idea that humans are in control of humans, that for many people it's been divided between those that believe in a higher power, a God or a source, and those that believe, well, that are atheist, agnostic, believe only in humans being able to represent humans. And it feels like, therefore, that the tradition of the breaking down of the religious systems is allowing the idea of having dynasties to be created and always looking for somebody to look up to, regardless if you believe in a higher power or not. It seems also that this is human nature, that we are designed to look for a mentor, for want of a better term.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, I'm a secular humanist. I'm not religious, and yet I am a monarchist. And the reason I like the idea of this constitutional monarchy is because it safely it unites a nation of different people with different philosophies under some kind of familial branch. I mean, the reason that the Commonwealth nations aren't at war with each other is because we're like siblings and our parent is keeping watch over us. And it actually maintains global peace far more successfully than the United Nations, than the European Union, than any of these bureaucracies ever can. And if we are serious about having a cooperative world, then we have to look at the lessons of the monarchy and ask ourselves, why does that system work? Why is it so peaceful? And the Republicans can't answer that, because you look at the decolonized nations of the world whenever the British Empire left, and they would dissolve into these political nightmare scenarios where you've got human beings with no higher calling, no idea of higher responsibility, descending into violence and chaos. Now, that is something that a constitutional monarchy protects a nation from. And it's like having a god, but you don't have to believe in a religion to have the benefit of this mentor. I think you've used the word. It's a mentoring system, and it's so important for human beings to have that.
Yeah, well said. Look, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick news update, but what I'm going to propose is, what happens when something goes wrong, if it's the government of the day, perhaps it's overreach, perhaps it's simply corruption, and when should a monarchy or a monarch act? That's the question for Alexandra after the break. We're going to take news headlines now. This is TNT Radio.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. North Korea has denied US intelligence reports that it was preparing to sell millions of artillery shells and rockets to Russia, and has accused Washington of spreading reckless rumours. Parts of Australia's east coast are again underwater following yet another round of heavy rainfall, and the death toll from violent anti-government protests sweeping Iran has risen to 17.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go.
Yeah, even there.
Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free
from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
One of the hardest things to be able to comprehend in the changing of the world as we're seeing it at the moment is what secrets do we have to reveal, what privacies do we have to give up, and what will the governments do in order to hide their secrets and not tell us what they're doing? Because all of us are second guessing what the agenda really is. There's so many things going on here, and the world is in some form of decline or perhaps even potential collapse. Certainly economically, food and energy is all becoming quite tricky. Where is it and when is it that a monarch can get involved here and say, you know what, we've identified corruption, we've identified overreach, and we're no longer satisfied that the government of the day is doing the right thing? That seems to be something that the monarch is incapable of doing. But Alexandra, what would be your take on that proposal?
So the monarch has to walk a fine line where they have to allow citizens to make their own mistakes as politicians. They are not there to minutely guide a civilization. What they are the keepers of the constitution. So they are there to make sure that the government of the day respects the principles and the responsibilities of their constitution. Now, you shouldn't, like, republics and democracies are stable over long periods of time. You know, 50 to 60 years, they should be able to chug along without getting into trouble. But once a century seems to be the average where some kind of crisis with the government erupts. Either somebody emerges who is extremely dangerous, or civilization gets taken over by some hysteria that would require the intervention of a monarch. Now, if you don't have that intervention, you see the collapse of political systems all around the world. It is the most common thing to happen to a government. But with us, the monarch can basically sack the government, and instead of assuming power themselves, it gives the people the opportunity to have another election and decide, like, basically pass judgment on a serious error that the government may have committed. So if that might be corruption, it might be an abuse of power, it might be an extremely unpopular new policy that they were not asked about that violates some kind of fundamental principle. So the monarch is not making a value judgment on it. They are just asking the public, hey, do you want to double check what's going on here? And this is what Americans don't understand about the constitutional monarchy at large, is that they are not governing and ruling over us. They are allowing people to maintain control over their governments when something goes critically wrong.
So now we're faced with something else that's quite interesting, is that Peter Fitzsimons, head of the Australian Republican Movement, has come out. There's been an article in The West that's appeared today, and he said that the country should no longer delay talks about moving away from the monarchy. He says, rule by birthright, a literally born to rule English sovereign, has no place in a democratic, egalitarian Australia. My question is, Alexandra, are we in fact still democratic and egalitarian?
Well, the problem, well, basically, Peter Fitzsimons can keep talking as much as he likes. He is the best monarchist flag that we have, because everyone knows that if we pass a republic, we're not going to, instead of these hereditary monarchs who basically train from the youngest age to bear this responsibility and to hold this position with the most merit possible, because don't forget, they don't just wander into it. They are trained from birth on how to handle this responsibility. Mm. We will have people like Kevin Rudd, Malcolm Turnbull, Peter Fitzsimons, all the people you don't want to see with absolute power in a presidency are going to be the first ones up there to do it. And so all the failings you can say about Charles or William, they are 1,000 times more true in this political class who really want to have absolute power. I mean, would you trust Kevin Rudd or Peter Fitzsimons to keep guard over Albanese? That is the question the public has to ask themselves, because they're not going to have a Tony Abbott as president. You're not going to get a Conservative president ever again.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because many people I've spoken to are likening an Australian president as pretty much at the best of an Australian of the year over a five-year period is probably who you're likely to end up with if you weren't going to go down the pathway of a former prime minister or someone in the political movement. And that generally results in three doctors followed by a sports star. So it kind of limits the who you're going to choose from. in that process.
You are going to get the worst pool of people possible, because only the politically connected and the politically motivated will put their hands up for that, or worse, it will be a celebrity figure. It is not going to be anywhere near the quality of someone who has spent literally 60, 70 years of their life training to hold that role.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because let's say, for example, this is just pure speculation, but Charles finds it's too difficult, or his health worsens and he's out of the job in the next year or two, and now we have a 40 or 42-year-old Prince William taking over. I mean, that seems certainly adequate time to become the king, certainly after his grandmother became queen at in her early to mid-20s. It's an interesting challenge, isn't it? I mean, at what age would people think, you know, certainly in the modern era, that a young monarch is simply too young? Would it be someone again in their 20s, or would they say, no, Queen Elizabeth did it and she did it with aplomb?
It doesn't actually matter, because at a certain point, if a monarch is too young, then a regent will be appointed who has a similar level of education and qualifications. So there are probably a dozen people there sitting at top of the royal family who have spent their whole lives in service. And this is what people forget. The politicians who want to be Republicans are not people who devoted their life to service, but all of the people in the monarchy, that is their entire life, is of service to the public. So there are plenty of people to hold that role. And as I said, it is mostly ceremonial, except for about once a century when they have to hold the government to account. And so whereas a president will have political power alongside a prime minister. So we are fundamentally changing the division of power, which is what has kept us safe all these years. And we know that republics aren't as safe as constitutional monarchies, because you can go and look at every republic, and even America, the world's most successful republic, as soon as they lost their ideology of freedom and their devotion to this American dream, their republic has started to crumble. And you now have Joe Biden as the leader of the free world. I mean, really? So, yeah, I would advise people to think very carefully about the sort of president they would have under a republic.
We are living in uncharted times, as we're seeing that the land of the free, the home of the brave, is anything but these days. You're right. And so you must be forced to question. And therefore, this is the best time in history to be alive, to be able to witness and to participate in the restructuring of planet Earth, it seems. Now, part of that, Alexandra, is the move to artificial intelligence. And a global AI summit was passed almost unnoticed last week. It was written in The Spectator. Can you tell us a bit more about what was going on there and your thoughts on this AI revolution?
So artificial intelligence is a little bit of a misnomer, because there's no real computing intelligence. It's all coming off the back of human morals that are built into this technology. So any discussion about AI future is going to be guided by the people who are working at the forefront of technology, and it's their morals and their ethics that is going to be bred into this technology that will govern us essentially moving forward. And unfortunately, conservatives don't spend nearly enough time looking at the AI future, but they will be enslaved by it one day if they don't. So with we had, for example, last week, while all this stuff with this Queen's sad passing was going on, they had the Global AI Summit. And who is it led by? Some of the world's most tyrannical theocracies and communist dictatorships. And they are the ones who are moving forward with AI. Why? Because they want increasingly granular ways to monitor and control their populations. That's what AI can provide. It's a way of collating a previously unheard of amount of citizen data and biometric data. And instead of all this cool future that people thought they were going to get, like, remember in the 80s and 90s, you were dreaming of a wonderful high-tech future. Well, our high-tech future actually looks like surveillance and control from the government. And this includes up and over to our cash as well, where they want to control what you can and can't buy. So with the AI technology, we have people like the Pope of Rome wanting to get involved in the conversation and claiming to care about ethics and making sure we have technology that doesn't leave anybody behind. But when you have technology that's all-inclusive, it is also, you can't opt out of it, right? If everyone is forced into technology, then you will become part of this system. And despite claiming to care about human rights, the first thing they did was import vaccine passports into the Vatican. So we have to be so careful about who is controlling this conversation.
So how do we, in fact, control this conversation when we have world leaders at the pinnacle of the church, therefore, and the Pope? And clearly, obviously, we've been talking about the monarchy for most of the program. Who do we go for, and how do we then find the right people to lead a counter conversation?
Well, first of all, I'm going to say, dear Liberal Party, where are you? Because this should be their cause of their spirit. This is exactly what they should be talking about. Let's take Australia as an example. We have a World Economic Forum idea, which is digital identity. It is a coercive digital AI future that shouldn't exist. We don't need it. And yet, what did the Liberal Party do? They wrote up the policy, they've put it into our federal politics, and they've passed it with the help of Labor and the Greens. Now, if we want to stop this kind of thing, we have to talk to our members and talk to our politicians and make it politically unpopular for them to pursue it, because politicians only listen to backlash. And so if people start saying, no, we don't want this future, this policy has to go, this piece of legislation has to go, then politicians will eventually listen because they want to be elected. But while ever we have a Conservative Party that offers no opposition to it and, in fact, is leading the charge toward an AI future, well, then the public has no choice but to start talking about it. Just talk about it. Make sure everyone that you know is involved in the conversation. Otherwise, this stuff is going to get pushed under the carpet without even a conversation.
It seems that more and more that the conversations are not allowed to be had. Many people have been censored on social media for talking about simply informed consent, which leads to the alternative, which is coercion. Is something that was pretty much swept under the social media carpet in the last 2 years. Do you see that this could also be another continued problem, and therefore the people will have to find alternate ways of being able to talk about it? Or does it mean that news organisations such as The Spectator and TNT Radio Live just become more prominent?
Well, again, here we have another example of conservatives failing their own movement. We had the censorship of social media, and instead of conservatives like Scott Morrison, our former Prime Minister, standing up and saying, we are going to protect the public forum to make sure that Australians can have the conversations that need to be had, they started drafting policy to protect themselves, the politicians, from speech they don't like on social media. Now, that is such a betrayal of everything that conservatives are supposed to stand for. So what I guess I'm saying is the reason AI and the reason technology is getting out of hand is because we have had political parties who don't appreciate the relationship between advanced technology and old school liberal and conservative values that need to be maintained. I mean, the war for free speech is not going to be had in publications. It is going to be had in the digital realm. And half the politicians doing it think that social media in the digital world begins and ends at their local newspaper. They don't understand the medium that they are dealing with, and they are listening to the lobbying of big tech organisations who want government commissions to make more coercive and more surveillance inside our digital realm. So it is a self-perpetuating nightmare while ever we lack politicians with the guts and courage to stand up and say, no, we believe in citizen values and freedom above our own political power.
Well said. We're going to pause for another break. When we come back, we're going to take this conversation a little bit further, and we're going to compare this new digital realm and its links to globalism and explore perhaps whether or not both sides of the political spectrum have already signed up to the globalist move, and that's why they are blind or ignorant to what we're discussing in this program about the separation and all about our freedoms. This is TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Fiona is almost a perfect-looking hurricane. It reminds me of when I was a kid. All right, I used to have pinups all over my room, but they were pinups of hurricane, like Cleo and Betsy and Alma, just looking at the eyes of those things. When I was a kid, instead of waiting for the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue, I was always waiting for WeatherWise magazine and the hurricane issue, because hurricanes were really strong between 1915 and 1965. Then they diminished for a while. Since 95, they've been coming back. Now, we have a system in the Southern Caribbean that is going to become a mean by Saturday, and it's going to be a mean storm. This is going to be a major hurricane, I think, hitting Florida later Monday and Tuesday, then perhaps moving up the East Coast of the United States. Fiona's going to hit Canada on the weekend as the strongest tropical cyclone ever recorded for that part of Canada. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
How's the dollar against the peso or the euro? For a favorable rate of exchange and the currency of free speech, listen to today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. I'm here with Alexandra Marshall, online editor for The Spectator, prolific writer. And if you haven't read any of Alexandra's work, gosh, go out there and search it. You're going to be impressed. And the idea, Alexandra, this move here of the politicians, and it seems that there's a tiering here. There's the higher level politician, and then there's the newly formed ones. And I'm hearing from some of the newly elected politicians that their resources are stretched very, very thin. They're pretty much left on their own since Albanese cut back the staffing levels. And this must be an incredibly difficult moment. And so what we're finding now is that our politicians aren't necessarily even properly prepared for the onslaught of work coming at them. And it seems that many of them are somewhat being programmed or maybe just led into the direction of going along to get along. And this is counterintuitive to the whole idea of a Westminster system of government and opposition.
Well, you're absolutely right. So one of the most depressing things you can do is go and talk to a politician and ask them some serious questions about one of their policies that they have promoted and discover that they know absolutely nothing about what they are putting forward. And even if they have read it, they don't understand or haven't considered the unintended consequences of what they are proposing. Now, this has not just been starting when they lost their staffers. This has been going on for a long time, where we've given people the job of creating policy. They sit there all day and they have to produce policy. Well, that's led to an absolutely suffocating amount of legislation that's being pushed through and so many laws in this country that you're probably doing illegal things by walking to the shops you wouldn't even know. And one thing that we don't do is we don't submit our politicians to proper questioning. The press don't sit them down and force them to answer complicated questions about what's going on in the big movements. And this is leading us to an era of where politicians are being guided by people overseas, these international bureaucracies, whether that's the UN with their climate policy or the World Economic Forum with their digital policy, where these high-powered corporates and bureaucrats can basically gift wrap terrible ideas, hand them to our politicians, and they just rubber stamp them thinking that they're doing a good thing and no one ever says anything.
Is this the equivalent of when a company puts out a press release or a politician puts out a press release and the local journalist picks it up and regurgitates it and just prints it in the local paper?
Yeah, so many of these policies, they'll just be reported on dry. You know, this MP has suggested this or this is being passed now. But how many times have you seen a politician dragged onto the nightly news program for half an hour and asked difficult questions which they have to actually answer and not just pretend that they heard a different question and regurgitate the main line? How many times have you heard a politician go into detail about some of the tricky and difficult parts of their policy? You don't see that anymore. Everything is so shallow. It's disappointing. As a journalist, I find it disappointing that you have to basically write hit pieces and articles because you can't even interview or talk to these politicians. And even if you could, they might not be capable of answering the questions anyway.
I'm so glad that you're able to say that and you mean it. And many people listening will be going, oh, thank goodness, I thought it was just me, because we don't see politicians held to account anymore. We knew that throughout the entire COVID period, where we're watching those daily whatever they were, press releases where Daniel Andrews got out and virtue signaled to the world and was never yet once held to account. He went on to that inquiry, and of course there was the missing text messages or the missing conversations, and of course no one could ever get in trouble for anything. And anyone who's actually watching and pulling their hair out on a daily basis is thinking, when will we get to see it? But the general public are thinking, well, they're good people. They're the bosses of us. They're authority, and it's they're all innocent. And what we're saying is, well, actually, they're just untouchable. They're protected
There's a good reason for that, and that's because most journalists who are in the mainstream media are terrified that they will miss out on their position in the bus at the next election, so they won't get to sit next to the Premier or the Prime Minister, and so they give them a soft and cushy ride through all their questions in order to make sure they stay in the political loop. Now, that is not how we should be running journalism with our politicians. Journalists are supposed to be the natural mediator and hold politicians to account, but that we've bred an entirely new environment between politicians and the press, which is dependent on ratings and depend on having those politicians come on their shows. Instead of saying to politicians, you must come on these shows as part of your role as being elected. You can't tell journalists no. And so the journalists won't ask them any questions because they're terrified of upsetting, you know, Premier Daniel Andrews or Prime Minister Albanese.
It is preposterous, isn't it, that your entire job is to be able to represent the public and to be held to account because you represent the public and are paid by the taxpayer. Now, a story you wrote a couple of weeks ago was entitled Cash is King for Now, and a quote that you used in the article from Connor Friedersdorf: to eliminate cash is to say hell with financial privacy. An end to cash would mean that every financial transaction is exposed to a third party. This, of course, in the beginning of the so-called digital age and a digital currency that's coming. What has been the reaction to that article? And if you can just expand on what you were trying to say there.
Okay, so cash is something that has to be protected at all costs. And I think I said in another interview that the great social war of this century will be the protection of cash. Because while ever you have the power to purchase whatever you want without the government getting involved, that is how the free market capitalist economy survives. Once we have all these bankers, particularly in Europe, who want to see a digital banking age where they have a digital currency where they can program it so they can control what you buy. Now, that means that if they've got these wonderful little climate goals, they can punish you or prevent you from engaging in what used to be free market economics. So something's failing. It's basically like living under a communist economy where you can't get rid of bad ideas by disendorsing them. You are forced to partake. Now, with the cash is king for now, we have policies and ideas in Australian legislation already, again, I'm sad to say, put forward by the Liberal Party, where they have a digital economy strategy 2030, where the idea is to make all businesses and all companies have all of their transactions digital by 2030. And the point of that is so they can get their digital ID in the middle of these transactions and make sure all of them go through the government. And they sell this idea to citizens as safety, which is, of course, not what it is, and convenience. Now, if we are too stupid and we buy the idea of laziness as a way of giving up our economic freedom, we will be the biggest fools in human history. We must fight to protect our cash. Otherwise, we have no control over our future economics. We will end up exactly like communist China, where we are controlled by the whims of politicians. So I would say to everyone, make sure you're aware of this push to get rid of cash.
Yes, indeed. It seems that many people like to just, it's beyond them at the moment. The fact that if the journalists aren't asking questions of the politicians, how can the average person in the street do it? But the other side, of course, to the AI and the digital currency would be the introduction of what would be the ultimate bribe and the cement that connects to the BRICS in the big wall that they're going to build, and that would be a universal basic income. And people talk about the idea of being paid $500 a week by the government to that goes to everyone as kind of a head start to get along. And many people think, well, you know, maybe I could just live on $500 a week and not have to do that drudgery of a job I had, and just live with what I with what I've got. But of course, what people don't realise is that that amount of money multiplied by that many people in society means that within 18 months to 2 years, you've just doubled your national debt, and it triples and it compounds from there as people expect more money to come along. And of course, this would be the ultimate inflation trigger. Is this all part of a great big trap? Is it part of an eventual collapse, or is it that people are just that easily led today?
Well, before we can get to a universal income, let me tell you what the bankers at the top are saying. First of all, they want to get rid of cash because they want to make sure that your money is trapped in the banking industry. And they said that once that happens, they'll be able to bring about negative interest rates. They can start eating away at your cash, and of course you can't take out your money or withdraw your money once there's no more legal tender of cash. So they want to be able to make people impoverished who have savings. Now, the reverse of that is, well, how do we reward people who have nothing and keep them dependent upon the state and control the economy? Well, that's the universal basic income. The problem is, I think I said it to you earlier, it's like robbing a bank where everyone has money for a few weeks. I think it's great. They've got all this money for doing nothing. But then the bank vault's empty and you've got nothing left to spend. So economies rely on citizens creating wealth and an economy actually making something. That's why capitalist economies are successful and socialist economies eat themselves into oblivion. Now, a universal basic income basically encourages the population to be a drain on the economy rather than to create things. And it just sends people into a dependency state. Now, the politicians like this because they can hand people money and get votes back in return. But as far as the overall health of the economy, it is a very short and slippery slope into debt, oblivion, and a collapse of society. It cannot be sustained.
Well said. Look, we've run out of time. It's been a delight to have you on the program. That has been Alexandra Marshall, the online editor for The Spectator, spectator.com.au. Please check it out. We've got the news next and Michael Gray Griffith to follow. This is TNT Radio.